The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Welcome to Let's Just Talk with Katherine Raker. Sponsored by Black and White Network, Buoyancy Public Relations, Sea Grace Productions, Circle B Ranch and Marina Kitchen, Cornhuskers Kitchen, Dan Perkins, author, Don J. Greco Novels, Eagle Watch Products, Bedbug Eliminator and Mosquito Eliminator, Fiona Fox Faraday, The Novel Karen, Grill Light Products, iMarketing.com, JD's Chili Parlor, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, 360 Cookware, and Veterans in Defense of Liberty. You're listening to W4CY.
Hi, this is Katherine Raker of Let's Just Talk Syndicated Radio. Our guest today is Reverend Jim Harden, Compass Care CEO. Reverend Harden is the CEO of Compass Care Pregnancy Services and lives outside of Rochester, New York, with his wife and 10 children. Reverend Harden pioneered the first measurable, repeatable medical model in the pregnancy center movement, helping hundreds of centers nationwide become more effective at reaching more women and saving more babies from abortion. He has written extensively on medical ethics, executive leadership, and pro-life strategy. Recently, ComCare's pro-life medical office in Buffalo, New York was firebombed. And I've been working on with Compass Care for a while now, but this is my first time I've had Reverend Harden on. Welcome to our show. Thank you for your mission. It's the most important mission on this earth, I think.
I agree, and I'm really, really honored to be with you, Katherine. This mission is something that's an outgrowth of the church. This is the church at work. That's what we believe. And we're so honored to be partnered with the church and with the people of God and in this way to save women and to save babies from abortion, because both of them are victims.
Right. They are. And they forget this group, the abortion group, basically believes that it's their body. They can do whatever they want, that nobody plays any other part of it. But the one thing I want to say, Reverend, is that there's another person, that two other people, God and the person that they conceived with.
Yes.
And there's a lot of fathers out there that don't want their babies aborted, or there's partners out there that don't want the baby aborted. What about them?
Exactly. It's funny you should say that, because our car broke down on this past weekend. And I had the whole family in the van. We have a 15-passenger van. We're all out, and it wouldn't start. So I had to call the tow truck. The tow truck guy came, great guy, and he said, "What do you do?" And we're driving the van back to the shop, and my family's stranded. I got to go get another car to pick them up. And he says, "What do you do?" And I said, "Well, you ever heard of Planned Parenthood?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Well, we're like the ethical version of Planned Parenthood. We don't do abortions. We don't provide a referral for abortions. We actually help women with ethical medical care." He's like, "Really? Well, that's amazing. I mean, I tell you what, let me tell you this right now. I could never imagine my girlfriend getting pregnant and going off and getting an abortion. It would be basically the end of the relationship." I mean, that's how strongly he felt. And there, people are not taking into consideration the ramifications that it just doesn't affect the woman and the child. It affects these other relationships you just described, God, certainly, and the father of the baby. There's ripple effects, and the ripple effects don't just stop there. The ripple effects go on and on throughout eternity, because what would have happened if that child had been allowed to live? The implications of that child, the child would have gone on and gotten married and had other children and had an impact on the world that would have continued to ripple on. And that's being truncated. And that's an oppression of the future generation. And that needs to stop.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is that in the last couple of months, I've had one of the gals that goes around and talks, and she just became a U.S. senator in her state. And she had had three abortions from the time she was 17 until she was 20 or 19 or 20. And she knew no better. Her father was, it was a sad situation, but they found their faith again. She joined a church and she got married, and then she couldn't have a baby.
Yeah. Well, what interestingly, this is a sad thing. And this is this happening all across the country for the last 50 years or more. What the abortion industry doesn't want the public to know, and the reason why that New York State is refusing to investigate pro-life pregnancy centers, because you know you probably know this, but when we were firebombed on June 7th, New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed a bill 6 days later. Not to investigate the arsonists and the nationwide, you know, pro-abortion terrorists, targeting Christian pro-lifers, but to investigate us, pro-life pregnancy centers in New York. Why? Because simply because we don't provide a referral for abortions. And in the press conference, she referred to us as Neanderthals. Now, they had till December 13th to amass an investigative committee, and they refused to do it. Why? And I'll tell you why. And the reason why is because they don't want the world finding out the truth that pregnancy centers give women every single day about abortion. Abortion is a fraud being perpetrated against women all across this country and globe. It is a serial medical malpractice. And let me give you a few statistics that most people don't know, and that New York State doesn't want anybody to know. It is this. Women have a five times more increased risk of suicide after an abortion. Women who abort suffer from a 44% increased risk of breast cancer and a 52% increased risk of future preterm deliveries, with the risk increasing with every subsequent abortion. Okay, that's a huge risk factor. And with chemical abortion, which now represents well over half of all abortions in America, women are five times more likely to end up in the emergency room than with a surgical abortion, with sepsis, hemorrhaging, undiagnosed ectopic pregnancy. This is a fraud being perpetrated, and it's being labeled as safer than Tylenol by these online purveyors. And right now, the Biden administration, as of January 3rd, deregulated these dangerous chemical abortion drugs, which are dubbed the chemical coat hanger, because they're so dangerous. Why do they deregulate them? Why are they on the FDA's REMS list, risk evaluation and mitigation strategy list? Only 70 drugs have ever made it on that list. And it's because they're so dangerous that when these chemicals come in contact with a human, that person needs to be under constant surveillance by a physician so they don't die. That's what they've deregulated and are calling safer than Tylenol. So what is the DOJ doing? Well, instead of going after the racketeering and the money laundering and the serial sex crime cover-ups that are happening in the abortion industry right now, they're going after pregnancy centers or abdicating their duty to investigate the violence against pregnancy centers that we've experienced in Buffalo with the firebombing.
Well, we're also now dealing with them bombing churches, and doing everything that they can to create as much chaos as possible. And you know, the people that have abortions, and especially the gal that I told you about, she had no idea when Planned Parenthood first talked to her what they were going to do. And that first abortion she had nothing, nada, to help. And she almost bled to death from it. Okay. So the thing that bothers me the most, okay, is that they don't explain it and they don't understand why abortions became this situation. And that's because of Margaret Sanger, who hated men. She was a Hitler supporter, a Nazi supporter, and all she wanted to do was get rid of the black race and the brown race. She didn't care. And this is what they don't tell them.
No, they don't. And Margaret Sanger, as you just described, was the eugenicist and the founder of Planned Parenthood. American Birth Control League was the original name. And what eugenics, the philosophy of eugenics, is rooted in Darwinian evolutionary theory. And the idea is that you can speed up the evolutionary process by you know, weeding out what Margaret Sanger called the human weeds. And the human weeds were people she didn't like, you know, the minorities, the quote, mentally unfit, whoever they are. Mentally unfit oftentimes fell into the category of poor people. So you look at Planned Parenthood and you realize, okay, are they still that way? Well, of course they are. Their own staff are complaining about their racism. The clinics are 79 to 80% of their clinics are actually placed in minority communities, targeting minority communities. And if you look at the ratios, the Black community represents 15% of the American population. Yet, 40% of all abortions are perpetrated upon the Black community. Look, you look at certain parts of this country, like in New York, for example, for every 100 Black babies born, 38 are aborted. Now, Planned Parenthood is the largest abortion provider in the world, so they're doing most of this. In certain segments of downstate in New York City, like the Bronx, for example, for every 100 Black babies born, 100 are aborted. Think about that. They are destroying the Black community. In Rochester, where I'm sitting right now, another abortion hub, I think it's 59. I think it's 59 for every 100 Black babies born, 59 are aborted. What that means is there is a horizon for the Black community's extinction, okay? And that's exactly what Margaret Sanger wanted. And people aren't aware of this. Politicians aren't, maybe they are aware of it, which would make it even worse. Abortion is racist at its roots. And it needs to be rooted out. Abortion needs to be rooted out. It is a scourge on our society.
It's actually killing. It's murder.
It is. Well, yeah, of course it is. You know, the original Hippocratic Oath, the oath that doctors would take before they started practicing medicine independently. There was a phrase in this oath that the doctors would take, even up till 1973, before Roe versus Wade was ruled, legalizing abortion throughout the country. They would say this phrase in the Hippocratic Oath: "I will not give a woman an abortive remedy." Think about that. I will not give a woman an abortive remedy. A doctor would take that oath, and why would they single out abortion out of all the things they could have singled out, saying we're not going to do that? Mm-hmm. It's because the purpose of medicine is to heal and to maintain the health of the patient. And abortion does neither one of those two things for either the mother or the child. And every doctor knows that when you're serving a pregnant woman, you're serving two patients, not just one. And so abortion was the original quackery, And so abortion's never been medicine. And so in order for quackery to be legalized and normalized in the mainstream medicine, you had to get political activists involved in medical care through a judicial act. They couldn't get it through the legislature because everybody knew that it was wrong. So they had to force their way through the judicial act and in an act of judicial legislative power, which again is unconstitutional. The whole thing is it stinks to high heaven. It is unjust, irresponsible. It's serial malpractice, and it's harming women, and it's sacrificing women on the altar of abortion. Now, you say, well, it's about women's health. It's about access to healthcare. It's about reproductive rights or whatever. It's not. All you have to do is look at the pro-abortion activist group's motto, Jane's Revenge. Their motto, the folks that firebombed us in June, their motto is that if abortion isn't safe, then neither are you. It's not if women aren't safe, then neither are you. It's not if abortion isn't safe. It's all about abortion. This is a billion-dollar complex that gets people elected. And it's not the government's job to decide who qualifies as a person protected under the law and who doesn't. But we should be very leery. And I don't care where people fall out on the abortion debate. Everyone should be very leery of a politician who thinks it's okay for the government to vest itself with the power to decide who qualifies as a person protected under the law. It's a 14th Amendment. In the Constitution, the 14th Amendment says that there's equal protection under the law should be afforded to all citizens, everybody. Irrespective. So partiality is the opposite of love in the Bible. If you look at the Bible, Jesus talks about love. Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, there's a way the Bible describes the opposite of what love is. And in the book of James, the letter of James, it says, partiality is the opposite. If you love your neighbor, you're doing well. You're fulfilling the royal law. But if you show partiality, you are violating the law in all its points. Why? Because we're if you miss that point, you miss it all. To show partiality means that you're playing God, getting to decide who qualifies for your favor and who doesn't, who qualifies for. And here, interestingly enough, there was a lawyer that once asked Jesus an interesting question. He said, "Jesus, what do I have to do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus says, "Well, you're the lawyer. You tell me." And so he said, "Well, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus said, "That's right. Go and do that. You'll be fine." I'm paraphrasing, you know. So in order to justify himself, the lawyer, wishing to justify himself, according to his bad behavior, asked Jesus a follow-up question. He said, "Yeah, but who's my neighbor?" You see, as soon as we start asking the question, who's my neighbor? Who qualifies as being my neighbor? Who should I love? That's the foundation for systemic injustice. Because a group of nine lawyers in 1973 asked an eerily similar question. They said, who's a person? And their conclusion was, by Henry Blackman in 1973, Roe versus Wade, quote, "The word person does not apply to the unborn." The word person does not apply to the unborn? Well, who says? A bunch of lawyers? No, God says that we're made in his image. And because we're made in the image of God, we are equally valuable and inviolable, not to be violated. And it's the heart of God to protect all people equally. God's heart grieves over the oppression of the vulnerable and the weak of society, of the fatherless, of the orphan, of the widow. And so should his people. And that's why you see Christians on the front lines of all these terrible systemic injustices throughout history. It's because we understand that we were the weak and the vulnerable. I am a sinner before a holy God, and I have no standing. I have no voice. I have no power of my own, right? And so Jesus came and became my good Samaritan, and he stopped, and he gave me my life back. And he says, "Now go and do likewise." That's what Christians do. Because we have experienced the love of God, and because we have had a good Samaritan, he says, "Now go find the one who's been beaten and left for dead on the dangerous Jericho road of culture and give them their life back." Who in this culture right now is the most weak and the most vulnerable but a child who's in the womb, whose mother thinks she's got no other choice than to end his or her life? And a child who where the government doesn't even recognize the personhood status of that child.
Well, that's the thing that bothers me, I hate to interrupt you, but bothers me the most is where you're getting live births and then they kill them.
Oh,
I mean, to me, these politicians are absolutely nuts.
It's a slippery slope. Because
it is extremely slippery. And if you know that politician that is running for office feels that way, then make a stand.
That's right. And you know, the politicians that made a stand during the midterm elections in 2022, they actually won. You look at the governor in Ohio, the governor in Texas, the governor in Florida, and any congressman or senator that took a stand for a strong stand for life, despite the fact that they're being outspent oftentimes, you know, orders of magnitude, specifically on the abortion issue. The politicians that stepped back and didn't talk about abortion, but instead talked about crime and money and, you know, whatever, they lost. And the Democrats figured something out. They figured it out. Morality, moral issues, that is, trumps money. And I said it in August. I said, "Look, all you Republicans that are pulling back and not talking about the abortion problem are going to lose." And the Republican National Convention came out 2 days ago, and they said that basically they blamed. That's what they said. The Republicans that lost. There was supposed to be this, you know, red wave that never happened. It died on the beach. They lost because they refused to step in and embrace the heritage of the Republican Party to stand on behalf of humanity. The Republican Party started in Wisconsin, formed to resist slavery, a dehumanizing institution. And there is nothing more dehumanizing than actually disqualifying an entire category of human from personhood status and protection under the law. And that's exactly what's happening with abortion. And so, you know, the Republican Party is now saying to all the candidates that want to run in 2024, they're taking our advice and they're saying, "Look, make abortion front and center. Become pro-life statesmen. It's not the job of government." As I said before, to decide who qualifies for protection under the law and who doesn't. It's the job of government to protect all people equally without partiality. Because if we start to parse out who qualifies as a person protected and who doesn't, then equality is just a word that's used to manipulate the masses for more political gain. It's a sham. The justice system is no longer blind, and it's being used to target right now pro-life people who hold this belief. Because this belief that all people are made in the image of God and therefore equally valuable, it is that belief that stands between absolute power and freedom. Because absolute power becomes tyrannical. And absolute power is basically the ability to decide who lives and who dies. Really? That's it. And so that's not government's job. Government's job is to wield the sword on behalf of the existing, inalienable, God-given rights of the people. And instead, the sword of government is being now turned on the people. And it's unjust. We saw that with respect to the trumped up FACE Act charges against peaceful pro-life people using the FBI to SWAT raid peaceful pro-life people's homes outside of FBI protocol, by the way. And of course, now Mark Hope just got off a trial, and he was declared not guilty on all counts. The DOJ should be held responsible. Justice has not been served. Just because Mark Houck was exonerated in Philadelphia a couple days ago doesn't mean justice was served. It means that the FACE Act, which is this Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrance Act, needs to be repealed. Because that act was a Clinton-era act that specifically targets pro-life people to cool pro-life speech around abortion clinics. It's never been used to indict pro-abortion people, except for a couple of just last week. And so that needs to be repealed. The DOJ needs to pay for all the legal expenses. The DOJ itself and the FBI need to be investigated. The searchlight of truth needs to be shined directly on these people, the DOJ, the FBI, that have been politicized. Our slow walking justice when there's violence being perpetrated, organized violence, by the way, being perpetrated by against pro-life people.
For it, and so are so many others paying for it. And they're trying to frighten people into submission. And it's really sad, Reverend Hardin. I mean, we here in Ohio really are pro-life. When you see the churches have all of the white crosses every year at a certain time, or maybe once more than once a year, It makes a difference. People really care. And if you can't look at what they do when you first get pregnant, right? What's in when you see a sonogram and you see that baby moving, even just in the very beginning, then you're really not human yourself if you don't believe that's a human being.
Well, we're at a crossroads in America right now, a crossroads of choice. And I say that not tongue in cheek. I'm not talking necessarily about a woman's right to abortion, although that happens to be the flashpoint right now. But we're at a crossroads about a choice about what it means to be human. You know, either we believe that we're made or either we believe that we're just a little above the animals, and we continue on this road of barbarism and continue attacking one another and dehumanizing one another, or we believe that we're made just a little lower than God. That's where true dignity is. Government doesn't give us dignity. God does. We're to respect one another and dignify one another as made just a little lower than God. We shouldn't shed each other's blood. We should respect one another. We are made in his image. That's where blind justice can thrive. But otherwise, it's rule of man. If that's not the foundational principle to a civilized order, then the civilized order is going to fray and tatter at the edges and pretty soon rip and light itself on fire. That's exactly what we're seeing happen all throughout this country, because we've been dehumanizing ourselves for generations now and teaching our children that they're derived from apes. What do we expect? Actually, you know, people are surprised that there are all these mass shootings and all this violence that's going on. We've been killing ourselves in a genocide fashion for decades in abortion. This is the question. It shouldn't be, why is this happening? The question is, why isn't it happening more often? That's exactly that's the logical conclusion to the philosophy that we've been teaching our children for generations. Look, there is no moral framework you can derive from an accidental kind of evolutionary happening where we just derive from apes. You can't have a moral framework that makes any sense to anybody. All you have is pleasure and pain, animalistic. Is this going to give me more pleasure or is this going to give me pain? And there's no purpose. Purpose is what determines right and wrong. And if our purpose is not derived from God, that is, we're made in his image, designed to reflect him back to himself and back to each other, then there can be no common understanding of right and wrong, no understanding of good or evil. And all it comes down to is this, dystopian, Nietzscheistic, will to power. Those that have the money and the power get to say what the moral framework should be. And of course, that's not a moral framework at all. It's just rule of man. And that's exactly what the founders of this country were intending to avoid. Rule of man, rule of one man over the masses, or rule of a handful of men over the masses. The abortion problem right now is just a symptom of a larger cancer that has essentially confounded the culture.
And you know what? I would love to have you back on again, Reverend Hardin. Let us know what is going on. The people that actually bombed your center should be prosecuted.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And Kathy Hochul should be not the governor of New York. I mean, I can't believe she won again. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. It is my hope that with more arrests on these Jane's Revenge attacks, we're going to find that a lot of these Jane's Revenge people are connected to people in power.
That's right.
I think Hillary Clinton of the world, Elizabeth Warren, Kathy Hochul's of the world. I think you're going to see that there's some collusion there. We know there's collusion with big tech. We know that there seems that there's collusion. They're using the same terminology. Hillary Clinton is likening us to Al Qaeda terrorists. Pregnancy centers, peaceful pro-life pregnancy centers are like Al Qaeda. I mean, Hochul calls us Neanderthals. Letitia James, Attorney General of New York, wrote an open letter to Google demanding that they wipe us off the maps, and they did. This is collusion. This is a conspiracy to deprive pro-life people of their rights, their First Amendment rights, and their 14th Amendment rights of equal protection under the law. And it needs to stop.
I want to introduce you to my brother, David. And I want to just say this before we end the show. David actually had leukemia at age 39. We thought he was going to die. God saved him. He's one of the angels on this earth. And at age 65, after 30 some odd years working for a wonderful beverage company, he decided to become a pastoral assistant. And he works with the pregnancy center. And he actually works with men that come in. And I have to tell you, he is such an angel on this earth, and God saved him to stay and to educate people about the issue that we've been talking about. How many, before I leave, how many children have been aborted in the United States? Millions, correct?
Well, we don't know for sure, but we're estimating somewhere on the order of 65 million since 1973.
I believe it. I want to have you on again. Thank you for your mission. Anything I can do to help you, and I want to send this out to all my audiences and put you everywhere. I'd love to have you as an expert on our because you're a nonprofit. Am I correct?
Correct.
Okay. You could be on my nonprofit as our expert. How would you like that?
Oh, I'd love to, Catherine. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. I will call you later and we'll talk about it because it's a very special place and you hold a big honor in our hearts. And
thank you.
I came from a very big family and my husband did too. And I loved every single one of my brothers and sisters. And, my mom really cared.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing.
It is my and my wife too. My wife is an anchor. She's our kids love her. She is a she's the best. And you know, it's like I can't say it's a party every day, but it sure is. The children do love each other, and they learn from each other, and they learn what it means to be human together as they grow in him and with each other. So it's great.
Thank you so much for joining me today. How can people get a hold of you,
Oh,
Reverend?
thank you. Yeah. If people want to learn more about how Compass Care is helping women and saving lives and helping other pregnancy centers too, by the way, they can go to compasscarecommunity.com. That's compasscarecommunity.com. And if they know somebody who may be considering abortions and is pregnant, they can they, we can serve them at compasscare.info, compasscare.info, like information.
Okay, and thank you so very much for joining me, and love to have you back on as our expert. So you said yes, so I'm going to make it happen.
All
Thank
right.
you very much.
Thanks, Catherine. God bless.
And don't forget to go to our website at Katherine Raikers, that's RAAKERS, world.com, and letsjusttalk.com. And don't forget our cooking show where we make people healthy, and that's the chef you and I. Thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you.
We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Katherine Raiker. Back to the show. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Katherine Raiker.
Hi, this is Katherine Raiker of Let's Just Talk. You know, it's never too late to prioritize wellness. And, you know, we're going to have a wonderful doctor on to talk about key information on seniors will really want to know. And actually, our guest is Dr. Richard Smith, MD, MBA, Regional Vice President for Health Services for Humana. And he's going to share reminders of what service beneficiaries may be missing out on and discuss the importance of preventative care. I want to welcome you to our show today. And I think every year people get a little confused on what the benefits are and what, you know, you can, you know, get out of it, actually. So welcome to our show, Doctor. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. Glad to be here.
Good. So tell me what doctors suggest this year that everyone should be focusing in on.
Yes, thank you. And I don't think it's particular to 2023. I think this is kind of an every year thing. We recommend that people become proactive in managing their health. There's a traditional sense that go to the doctor when you're sick, and you don't necessarily go at other times. The idea is that by being proactive within your own space, going to the doctor to get screening exams, to get appropriate vaccinations, those are things that you should plan into the course of 2023 and beyond. For Medicare members, there's also an annual wellness visit that you can have with your care provider. And that allows you to have a discussion with your physician or clinician about how to maximize your health by creating that plan that's going to get you the right vaccinations, the right screening exams at the right time in order that you continue to live your best life.
And aren't there things about, you know, especially for medications and whatever, if you're on insulin and how much you're paying, you know, there's things about that as well, aren't there?
Oh, yes. And I'm first going to start with the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed last year, because that's the insulin issue that you refer to. There are two parts in the Inflation Reduction Act that significantly affect care that's available to Medicare beneficiaries. Under their pharmacy benefit, now traditional Medicare doesn't have a pharmacy benefit, but you can purchase a Part D as in dog plan in addition to traditional Medicare to get a pharmacy benefit. Most Medicare Advantage plans have a pharmacy benefit arm. But for Medicare beneficiaries, under that pharmacy benefit, you can get insulin costs capped at $35 a month, which is a huge reduction from what it's been costing the past many years. The other thing that's included is you can get a shingles vaccine. Shingles is a very painful illness, more common in older adults, but anyone who has had chickenpox can get this as a recurrence of that infection. But the shingles vaccine is available at a local pharmacy at no cost to Medicare beneficiaries.
Can you get shingles more than once, doctor?
Yes, you can.
And so that shingles vaccine is really important for you to get, right? Do you do it every year, doctor?
It's a one-time shot at this point in time. And it does, you may still get shingles, but hopefully it reduces the severity and duration of the illness if you do get it. No vaccine is 100% effective, but usually they help reduce the seriousness of any infection.
So what's an overview of the most important preventive care benefits and screenings covered by Medicare plans this year?
Good question. So I would start with screening for cancer, and so that would be breast and cervical cancer in women, prostate cancer in men, colon cancer for everyone. Bone density testing for Medicare beneficiaries is important. As we get older, we do lose bone mineral mass, and that makes us more susceptible to broken bones. Mental health screening, specifically depression, screening is available to Medicare beneficiaries. And it's important to get it diagnosed and, if needed, treated so that your mental health is maximized. Others that are less common but just as important, glaucoma is an eye disease that should be screened for on a regular basis. Hepatitis, which is a liver infection, should be screened for, and HIV when appropriate. And all of those are covered for Medicare beneficiaries.
And there's a real big importance of vaccinations. And which ones are free through Medicare? I know you mentioned a couple, but are there more?
Yeah, I did mention the shingles vaccine. Your annual flu shot, COVID shots as they're mandated or indicated, and then pneumonia vaccination is an important one for older people.
So, doctor, we want to thank you for your mission, and where can people go and get more information about all of this? Because if you're taking care of your mother or your father or your aunt or your uncle and they aren't right there, you know, as far as they may have dementia or whatever, so you need to help them.
Yes.
Actually, I think it's important, and you probably do too, that people go together when they go see the doctor, says that they'll remember things. Because a lot of times, even if you're very clear about stuff, you may forget. Am I right?
Absolutely. As my father got older, I attended all of his medical visits just to make sure two people heard what the physician or clinician had to say. But for everyone that's Medicare eligible, Medicare.gov has a lot of good information for you. If you have a Medicare Advantage plan, you should also look at the webpage for the health plan or call their customer service number, and that information should be on the back of your Medicare Advantage card.
I want to thank you so much for what you do, doctor. It really does help people to stay healthy and happy and stay alive. Am I right?
Absolutely, and my thanks to you and your listeners for taking the time.
Thank you so very much, doctor. And don't forget to go to our website at letsjusttalk.com. See you soon. Thank you very much, doctor, for joining us today.
We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Katherine Raker. Back to the show. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Katherine Raker.
Hi, this is Katherine Raker of Let's Just Talk. You know, as we settle back into the second half of the school year, millions of kids across the country are riding a bus to school. Now, more than ever, districts are making sure the ride to school is beneficial for both the students' health and the environment by using cleaner energy. Joining us today is Tucker Perkins from the Propane Education and Research Council to share information about the benefits of propane. Welcome back to our show, Tucker. How are you today?
Katherine, thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
That's good. So, Can you tell my audience why it's so important for our kids to ride school buses powered by cleaner energy sources? Would you mind doing that?
Yes, and it's really important. It's a benefit for the child to have a quieter, healthier ride to school. It's a benefit for the community. Every mile these buses travel in the community. And it's really much better for the environment. So it's really a win for the child, a win for the school system, and a win for the earth.
You know, are buses powered by alternative energy sources better for a child's health? And, you know, I think you've been using propane in school buses for a while now, haven't you?
Yeah, we started about 12 years ago. Really, we started around just a concern around that cloud of black smoke, right? We knew that inside that cloud of black smoke that was in a diesel school bus were harmful pollutants, and they're harmful to everyone, but particularly harmful to children's lungs, creating diseases like asthma, bronchitis, a host of other breathing conditions. And Georgia State did a study that said children that rode to school in low emission buses actually had tested higher in math and science. When we began to unpack that study, we realized that a healthier ride allowed children to go to school more often. A quieter ride allowed them to be calmer, arrive to school just more ready to learn. And when you put those two features together, that choosing propane for modern student transportation was so beneficial for the child and the school.
You have 22,000 propane school buses on routes today in 49 states. Wow.
Yeah, 1.3 million children rode to school this morning on buses powered by propane.
Well, you know, I lived overseas and they used propane all the time, so I was used to it when I would see it on cars and buses and everything. So how are these buses better for our communities, which is really important today, wouldn't you say?
Very important, and they're really better for our community, again, in several ways, right? Buses are in the community, so every mile they drive, the streets are quieter, the air is cleaner, so much better in the community. But the real benefit for a community is that a propane bus costs less to purchase, costs less to operate. In fact, in many cases, cost over half less. So the operating costs are half that of a diesel bus. We did a study that said if we converted all of the diesel buses to propane across this country, we'd save enough money to put 23,000 teachers into the classroom, 23,000 more teachers. And so you begin to see the importance of saving money. Right? For all of us, saving money is important. In a school system, it's really important. And by choosing propane, we allow them to save money and then put that money back into more teachers, better instruction materials, healthier schools.
So how common are the alternative energy school buses? Do you see, is that 50th state going to have it next?
Yes, I think, you know, we see it in 1,000 school districts, and those districts continue to buy more and more as they transition from diesel to propane. They seem to be on a path to use exclusively propane, so we love that. And then adjoining school districts who attend meetings, they begin to see these stories after story of not only cleaning the air, but quieting the ride and saving money. And so they begin to investigate using propane. They buy one, then two, then five, then 10. So we really like the pace of adoption. You know, just like everything else, fleet managers are often resistance to change. And they need to be convinced by their peers. They need to see case studies. And that data is all out there now. The data is clear about a child is benefited, the school system is benefited, and frankly, the climate is benefited.
So for a long time, people have been using propane for their homes to heat their homes. So, I mean, that's cleaner energy there. So how different is it for, you know, how often do you have to use propane? Now, this is going to sound a little weird, but how often do you have to fill the propane up for the school buses?
So when we work with the manufacturer of those buses, we really design them to have about the same range as a diesel bus because that's what fleet managers have been used to. And a lot of school systems drive very lengthy routes every day. So, you know, we want to make sure that they have no concerns about their daily range. So it feels to the driver like they were driving a diesel bus. Drivers tell us it feels a little bit more peppy at the accelerator. They love the way it feels. Drivers tell us, though, that they notice immediately the cleaner ride. They themselves notice it, and they love the quieter ride. They can talk with the children. They can hear the children's conversations. They like that quiet ride. But really, feature on feature, it feels to a driver, you know, like a diesel bus. It's just much cleaner and costs less to operate.
So let's talk about the impact for schools, school systems, budgets, and the costs. What is the difference between, if you could explain that to our listeners, that would be important.
You know, as we think about today and getting to a better place today, it's really a choice between propane over diesel. The initial cost of a propane bus is about the same as a diesel bus, but the cost is half that to operate. So we see day in, day out, school systems saving thousands of dollars a year by choosing propane over diesel. As we really think about the future, I think school systems will decide they're probably only one of two ways to safely get children to school. That's either an electric bus or in a propane bus. When we think about propane versus electric, the main advantage is, in fact, cost. A propane bus costs one-third that of an electric bus. And really, the real benefit there is it allows a school system to get rid of those older, dirty diesel buses at three times the rate. So we decarbonize today, but we bring more and more benefits to the riders in that school system by choosing propane over electric, because we get rid of the older diesel buses at three times the rate.
What can parents do if they want schools to get these buses, Tucker? It would be important for them to understand it, too. Do you do things with, you know, parent-teachers associations and whatever in the schools so parents can come and find out about it?
Yeah, we really like to have parents engaged in a conversation about how to clean the air and quiet the ride and how to get their children, you know, a better ride to school. So we created a website called BetterOurBuses.com. BetterOurBuses.com. It's the right place for parents to go to not only learn about the science we're talking about today, to learn the facts, but to learn the right questions to ask their local leaders about why can't they have the benefits of a quieter, cleaner, healthier ride to school by choosing propane. At website again is BetterOurBuses.com.
Thank you for joining me today and your mission on with propane, because I think it's a very smart idea. I think I trust it more than electric buses, let me say that. Anyhow, and electric buses use batteries, am I correct?
Yeah, a lot of people don't really realize, you know, certainly they use batteries, and medium-duty vehicles like school buses or trucks, the batteries are very different, much heavier, much more mineral-intense than a passenger car battery. But people don't realize that the grid today is predominantly powered by coal, oil, and natural gas. And so in choosing propane over a battery electric vehicle, not only are we still cleaning the air and decarbonizing now rather than waiting for some date in the future, we're taking that strain off of an already fragile grid. And so it really is the perfect complement to anyone thinking about how to clean the air, quiet the ride, reduce the strain on the grid, but still improve the environment. It's really the right choice for today in transportation.
And then the other thing is, where do you find all the stations that you plug into?
Yes.
That's very important. So I think propane is really the winner here.
Yeah.
I want to thank you so much for your mission and what you do, and keep it up. And what do you see in the future? I think you're going to get that 50th state. I absolutely hope so.
I am sure we will as well.
And thank you so much for joining me on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk. Don't forget to go to our website at letsjusttalk.com. Give your website out one more time.
BetterOurBuses.com.
And thank you, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker, sponsored by Black and White Network, Buoyancy Public Relations, Sea Grace Productions, Circle B Ranch and Marina Kitchen, Cornhuskers Kitchen, Dan Perkins, author, Don J. Greco Novels, Eagle Watch Products, Bedbug Eliminator, and Mosquito Eliminator,
Fiona Fox Faraday, the novel Karen, Grill Light Products, iMarketing.com, JD's Chili Parlor, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, 360 Cookware, and Veterans in Defense of Liberty. You're listening to W4CY.